Born in the pandemic era, thriving in the Zoom era, it's Resonance Rewind with Robin Pierce, Jessica Burtis, Pamela Sue Mann, Jenny Bill, Kathy Manzo, Alex Lefchuk, and more, sharing lessons from the creatives of yesteryear for the population of today.
Do you ever get that swift, eerie stab of sudden fear? Your well-known sixth sense warning you that somewhere, hidden in the fog, eyes watch. Danger lurks. Or could it be you're simply preparing yourself for another edition of Resonance Rewind? And we're all set and ready to go, but is the whole student body simply buzzing with homicidal ingenuity? We'll find out, but let's go to our ITC expert, and indeed the author, amongst other things, of The Ultimate Guide to the Prisoner, holding it up now, truly a wonderful text, and of course, ITC Spies, the publisher of Annette Andre's memoir, Rick Davey. How are you, sir?
Very well, Alex. Good to speak to you again. How are you keeping?
All good. And as we launch 2023 and continue ever onwards, we have, of course, Jenny Bill with us. We have Robin Pierce and Stephen Pierce. And actually, curiously, this means that residents of Wales, for once, now outnumber residents of England on Resonance Rewind, 3-2, no less.
There you go. The Principality is fighting back.
Clearly. Rick, talk to us about The Death Game and give us your initial thoughts before we find out what young Stephen Pierce made of it and, of course, Jenny and Robin.
I loved it. I thought it was great fun. I think what's lovely about the Saint colour episodes, as opposed to the black and white ones, is that they are a lot more lighthearted, especially the beginning of the episode. It had almost an Avengers feel to it, I thought.
Yeah.
And I really enjoyed it going through the episode. Roger Moore was at his suave best. I thought Angela Douglas, as always, gave a wonderful and enthusiastic performance, which I thought helped the thing along. The villains were kind of a bit stereotypical, but that's what I liked about it, to be honest. I love the halo, Alex. It's a good look. You are the world famous Alex.
I've worked on the eyebrows for many a year.
I really enjoyed it. I think it's a great episode. I hadn't seen it for a long time, so I'm pleased that you chose it, because it's not one of the ones that maybe gets shown over and over again, one of the regular ones. I thought it had a good plot. As I say, it had a nice kind of lighthearted Avengers feel to it at times. Roger Moore was at his best. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was great.
Of course, although it seems as though Adolf Vogler is finished off at the end, he does re-emerge later in the season. But that's perhaps a mini spoiler alert there. Let's turn to Stephen Pierce. Stephen, your first time watching this particular episode of The Saint, no doubt. Your thoughts, please.
Yeah, it was the first time I'd seen it. I might come across as kind of the opposite side of the spectrum, because I thought the episode was okay. The only thing that I felt with it a bit was that I liked Simon Templar a lot with his, and Roger Moore with his performance and the way he delivered, very much like he would later on with Bond. But I found a lot of the other actors in it, it felt a bit stilted. I loved the idea of the death game itself, and I wish they would have explored a bit more of it. I kind of felt it lost a bit of momentum as soon as they went to Switzerland.
Interesting you mentioned stilted acting there, because I was recently rewatching the surviving episodes of Doomwatch, which is a great series, but some of the acting there is interesting. Let's turn to Jessica Burtis. Jessica, another episode of Roger Moore as Simon Templar, the Saint, of course. Clearly, this whole notion of students being recruited by the British Foundation for the Advancement of Psychological Research, problematic. What it says about Erasmus students and their particular position, who knows what could happen there. But Jessica, your thoughts, please, on the death game.
I liked it. I know we've seen some episodes of The Saint before, so I think this one was a cool one. I think the whole idea of the death game was really interesting. I feel like we have a lot of interest in risky games, psychological things. It was funny watching him do the little survey with its tons of questions. But I agree. I wish we could have seen more of the death game, especially since it's, you know, the title of the episode. I wish we could have just like delved a bit more into it. But I know it was kind of like a short episode. It's only 40 minutes. So not a ton can be explored, but I would have loved to know more. It seems like such an interesting idea. So I think this episode was very cool, not only because of the characters, but just the whole premise of it was just so interesting. I desperately wanted to have more information. I feel like it ended very fast.
There was certainly a lot that was packed into this whole episode. And we add to that, of course, the onset of Angela Douglas, as you already mentioned, Rick, somebody who really nailed the sort of student, from somebody who clearly has a high originality index in terms of her interestingly designed taxi, which she started off by driving. But in the end, the Simon Templer takes on board the driving, clearly his ST1 Swedish Volvo, not available in this particular episode. But Jenny, we've heard you sort of commenting in background then in Twix times. Jenny, Bill, your thoughts about the episode?
I do very much like The Saint. I would have to say there's not one of my favorite episodes, and as Rick was saying, there were aspects of it that did sort of remind me of the Avengers, and as you probably all know, I'm not a particularly big Avengers fan. I don't really like what I kind of like the silliness of it, and I felt this episode, I think it started off really well. And then I kind of thought the characters became very cliched and it all got a bit silly. And then the ending, I thought, well, how easy was it just for, you know, they just run after Simon Templar with guns after all these elaborate ways that they had devised to kill people. And like Jessica said, it kind of ended very quickly. It was okay. I mean, I enjoyed it. I wasn't watching it bored, but it wasn't one of my favorite Saint episodes.
Okay, Robin Pierce, given that we had Inspector Claude Eustace Teal, played by the wonderful Ivor Dean, featured in force here, plus arguably a wonderful scene-chewing villain in, of course, Adolf Vogler, and clearly the first name might have given away the notion that Mr. Vogler, Herr Vogler, was not necessarily to be trusted, especially when he was actually putting together a kind of worldwide blackmail. Let's not also forget Gray Tyler, of course, Gray, who went on, at least the actor at least, to become a reality or realtor, real estate agent in California, as you would, no doubt. But anyway, over to yourself, please, Robin.
I agree with some of the comments that we've heard so far, but not all. Well, I've enjoyed the episodes of The Saint that we have watched so far, and I've watched the first couple of seasons of the black and white episodes, and, you know, I've enjoyed them. This is, I think, the least of what I've seen so far. I felt that the plot, although clever with the modern day, you know, death cults pretending to kill each other, but actually being recruited for, with apologies to DC Comics, some kind of League of Assassins, was actually very, very good. But there were plot holes that I could literally drive a bus through that I couldn't get over. For example, when the two students are with Simon Templar and Vogler, and it suddenly becomes apparent that Vogler knows that Templar isn't who he pretends to be, you know, Templar gets up and say, well, yes, your safe is over there, and this contains this, that, and the other, and all the evidence I'm going to need. How did he know? There was no scene showing that he did any investigation whatsoever. I mean, that could have been a curtain to a toilet as far as he's concerned, because he didn't look behind it. Then at the very end, when, you know, sort of Vogler has been shot, Templar calmly enters this vault and starts burning evidence, starts burning the files. Now, surely he is absolutely shattering the law there, because it implies that now there are hundreds of would-be sleeper assassins all over the world who need debriefing, but the authorities can't get to them because of Templar's meddling. Now, maybe he was only selecting a few files to burn, but who knows, because it was never explained. I thought that maybe he would have been burning the file of the leading lady. Then the authorities would have turned up and he'd have said, well, all the evidence that you need is there. You know, these people need to be debriefed. But knowing that he'd perhaps save the reputation of Jenny Turner. But it just went from him burning and looking a little bit smug to the end titles, the end credits. And it was like, the heck are you doing? Yeah, you know, it seemed like there was a real missing somewhere. But other than that, it was okay, but, you know, definitely not the best. And what is it with the opening scene establishing London in a pea super, and you see 1930s cars driving around? This was 1968 or 69. You know, come on, guys.
I think with reference to the last point, I mean, the fact that The Saint was originally focused in the 1930s, and Leslie Charteris, who I don't think probably would have rated this as one of his great incarnations of The Saint.
It was set in the 30s, opening it up with a 30s, you're stretching there. You're really stretching there.
Well, I mean, story by John Cruise and screenplay by Harry W. Junkin, of course. I mean, do you think these criticisms are fair, Rick? I mean, I tend to think that maybe you sometimes need to suspend that disbelief and go from the toy soldiers as they march along to the whole notion of Templar being shot through the arrow, gassed, and then finally blown up. He's now the ex-Simon Templar. I mean, what a wonderful teaser for the actual episode.
I mean, I loved it, but I you'd have to agree with some of what Robin says, because, you know, there are plot holes. But if you start to analyse the plots of ITC shows, then you're in a world of trouble. You know, when you think, watch things like The Saint and The Avengers, which isn't strictly an ITC show, but it's the same kind of genre of thing. I don't think you can analyse the plot too much. I think watch it for what it is.
I agree with you completely. I mean, I've often asked, you know, why doesn't the sniper just shoot Batman through the head?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you're right. And the end, I know what you meant about the ending. It did kind of feel as though it just suddenly ended and there wasn't any kind of, but I'm not sure it needed that. I think the story was told. Did that end scene need to be there at all? It could have just, you know, that he didn't need to go into the back room and start.
It would have been better without
anything. He could have just stopped before that. And then it's in your imagination to say, well, the police come along in a minute and take away the evidence. And there you go. I want to agree with something Stephen said as well, which is about some of the guest performances. I mean, there was a lady actress, and I'm sure she's very nice and a very good actor, but it was kind of your kind of basic, I am English and I'm pretending to be Swiss. Yes, I am now going to do this. And it was all, there was a lot of that. It was a bit of, you know, she was chewing the scenery at one point, as was the guy playing Vogler. And Bernard Horsfall put in a good performance, I thought. Alex, always good value for a guest appearance. He was the one playing the original tutor who was killed by the exploding phone.
The assistant professor, Bill
Bast. Yeah, absolutely. I thought they gave good performances. Ivor Dean's always excellent, whether he's in The Saint or as Inspector Large in Randall and Hopkirk. He always gives the same kind of a performance each time. So I think there's some fairness in what Robin's saying. But I think for these ITC shows, you've got to suspend your disbelief and just enjoy it for a bit of fun and for what it is. And I think this is one of those episodes where that's.
Indeed. Catherine Schofield, of course, was the eponymous Gretel, who did her own particular side of things there. Jessica, again, talking characters, we're not moving on as yet to favourite characters. But, I mean, given, say, the two female leads that we had here, Catherine Schofield, obviously pre figuring and foreshadowing the red jumpsuits that would be so popular with the invaders in V in the 1980s. So clearly on that basis alone, you know, intriguing side of things. And of course, Jenny, played by Angela Douglas, doing a whole stack of costume changes. And let's not forget, of course, how good Simon Templar actually looked in his Christmas jumper. I thought all of the Christmas jumpers that were actually on display in the ski chalet sequence deserve points alone, especially the fact that you could identify the Canadians because they had a big maple leaf stuck on their back, which is very important.
Let's not forget that Roger Moore started his career modelling jumpers like that.
Exactly, exactly. It's a little nod in the direction of his time as a male model. Anyway, Jessica, your thoughts in terms of how the narrative proceeded and took us jumping along from the initial assassination of not one, but two psychological professors. I mean, those two psychology professors, the department obviously had openings after that because there were two deaths in the whole sequence and both of them went. Obviously, if Einstein's had his back left off, because that's what he used to do with respect to computers, if they overheat, you take the back off. And then if you stick a metallic thing into them, then obviously you can electrocute yourself. Very problematic. Anyway, Jessica, over to yourself.
I liked all the characters. And I think something about the Saint is, like, I don't watch the episodes frequently enough to really know the characters very well. So I wonder if I would get to know them better if I would kind of watch them more back-to-back and in more of a chronological order. But I think they worked well together. I think that, to me, I'm not particularly attached to many of them because I think in this episode, the plot to me surrounding the death game was more interesting to me than the characterization of the main people. So I feel like I was kind of more focused on the plot and the assassinations and kind of not so much on the characters. It's like at the end, I didn't really feel like I wasn't worried about them being in peril. I kind of feel like I knew that they would be okay. So I feel like I didn't really have a reason to get like too attached to them, just because it was like, it felt very safe. But I wonder if the rest of the seasons are like that or if it kind of gets a bit more risky.
I certainly think that the moral of the story for me was if you are imperiled, the first thing you actually should look for is a fire extinguisher, because clearly that is critical in terms of actually providing the ultimate defense against any villainous folk who might be chasing after you, whether it's 2-1 or indeed 4-1, because let's not forget Vogler's two henchmen who also kind of joined in the fun to actually run through the woods, which was also problematic. Interesting enough, we look at some of the other previous episodes of the site. We've looked at both, obviously, the Loch Ness Monster, in which the monster was a fake from that point of view. We looked at the giant ants with Annette Andre, of course, which, again, obviously had real giant ants. And I think, actually, Rick, this is a classic example. I mean, the one that follows this, the Gadget Lovers, also dealing with that spy-fi, high-tech aspect. I mean, you even here have the equivalent of a kind of a base that's actually systemized within the whole system. And you know, maybe it is a case of here we see a foreshadowing of Roger Moore as James Bond.
I think that's right. I think I mentioned earlier on that the early black and white Saints are a bit more gritty than the later colour ones. I think these become a lot more fantastical, you know, as you say, with the little soldiers at the beginning of this episode. It did feel like something out of the Avengers. And I think it does proceed in that way. I think throughout the colour ones, I mean, the first colour episode is, you say, the one with the giant ant. You can't get much more sort of sci-fi and fantastical than that. And you get a lot of that in the colour Saints, and you get a lot more, is campness the right word? I think Roger Moore, and by now in the Saint, has turned Simon Templar into Roger Moore. I think Simon Templar started out being a character in his own right, and by the end, Simon Templar is just Roger Moore being himself. Of course, it's now made by Baymore Productions, which was a production company set up by Roger.
And strangely enough, Rick, at this particular moment, your bandwidth seems to be dropping and you seem to be going into Dalek territory, but never mind.
He's directing a lot of them by this point as well.
And he's gone.
Oh, no.
Okay.
Well, we wanted sci-fi, so I thought I'd give it a bit of a sci-fi motif with the voice.
That's very impressive. Stephen, let's turn to you in terms of favourite characters. Which ones for you effectively floated your boat, and which ones did you feel actually worked or didn't work in terms of the characters you'd most like to hang out with?
Simon Templar was definitely my favourite character in it. As far as the other characters go, I agree with Jessica. I was more interested in the actual death game itself and kind of how that actually works and the people involved. Simon Templar was the only kind of actor there that I kind of felt any attachment to. The others kind of felt a bit... kind of, you didn't really grow that attached. So if, for example, one of them did die or get killed, the attachment wasn't there. I kind of felt they were, like I said earlier, they're a bit stilted.
I would excuse Jenny Turner as portrayed by Angela Douglas for this, because I felt she actually did actually cope very effectively with the whole process. Alan McNaughton as Dr. Manders, again, obviously one of the two people who did die in the whole system. The one that I thought did actually do a very good job of portraying a definite sociopath, the likes of which, yes, you could well go into either American politics or indeed American real estate, or indeed as he did in Salon Kitty, portray a Nazi. As John Steiner, as Gray Wyler, which was quite interesting, although we don't want to blur the notion of the characters with the actors that they're portraying, because otherwise that way is a very dangerous line to go down. Jenny, what about yourself? Which one for you stood out? Are you going to surprise us and say, well, it had to be Chief Inspector Teal, played by Ivor Dean?
I almost feel, well, it has to be Jenny, really. But I did like the Gray character. I think... I like the Jenny character. She irritated me at first, and then I kind of liked her by the end, because she was quite sweet. But I think the Gray character, he was pretty
cool. It worked, he said. It worked when he finds his assistant professor actually executed by the tuning fork mechanism.
He was clearly psycho from the beginning, and he was channeling it very well.
Perfect quote for me actually was after the Saint had actually suffered the simulated death on three occasions. Mr. Templar, would you like some tea? I mean, isn't that just so wonderfully British? But Mr. Templar, would you like some tea? I mean, that ultimately it says the whole system. I don't think it was sweet tea, Jessica, but you know, that's for another time. Rick, I think you're kind of back with us now. Who's your favourite character in this one?
Oh, well, you've got to say Templar, just because Roger Moore is always superb in the role. I really liked Angela Douglas's Jenny. I thought Inspector Teal was good. The chap playing Gray, he gave a very almost a hyperactive performance, where you kind of thought, is he over-egging this? But that's because his character was a psychopath, so naturally he's going to be over-egging it. I did like his accents near to the end by the actors. Those were very good indeed. Angela Douglas is just so gloriously sweet in everything she does. You watch her in the Carry On films that she did, she always gave a really enthusiastically sweet performance. I think she was the same in this. Lovely to know that she's still with us. So it's good to know that she's still out there and does these sort of signing shows. You can go and see Angela and have your autograph and picture taken and whatever. And I think she's great. So I'm going to say Angela Douglas's character.
In fact, she'll be featuring one of her fellow actors from the same agency as Angela Douglas on one of our media matters in the not too distant future, hopefully.
Oh, great.
So good news for that. Hetty Baines will be joining us. But Jessica, thoughts for yourself in terms of favourite character, please.
I think the main guy is my favorite. He's so suave and just like very mild mannered. I feel like he's just a very solid character. And I think that I feel like he's very of his era when this was made, of that kind of archetype of hero, where a lot of the main guys were a lot like him. But it doesn't make me like the archetype any less. I always think those characters are so cool. So I think he's my favorite.
So Roger Moore as the Saint, of course, or Simon Templar would be your favourite character from that perspective. OK, and Stephen?
Definitely Simon Templar.
Yeah, OK, we've done that. Robin?
Yeah. Well, you've always got to tip your hat to Roger Moore, who at this point in the series it was effortless for him. He was just effortlessly cool. He was suave, sophisticated. And the jump from Simon Templar to James Bond was just so smooth.
Even Brett Sinclair, of course.
Brett Sinclair in the middle. Thought I'd forgotten him, huh? Wrong. But he wasn't my favourite character in this. I liked John Steiner as Grey Wyler, but I felt he was doing a bit of manic scenery chewing and rolling his eyeballs. The one who really caught my eye was the other student. Now, was that Joe Halston, played by Stuart Cooper, the Canadian? Because he underplayed it, and he had this steely gaze and this half smirk, whereas Grey Wyler was, I'm going to kill you. And he came across like the Joker in Batman. He was just way too manic. Joe Halston was smirking because he knew he was going to get you. There was that kind of confidence. There was that kind of steely cold-heartedness behind him, which actually convinced me this guy is an assassin. And I would be able to know where Grey Wyler was, because I would have heard him giggling from 100 yards away. But Joe Halston, that sucker is going to be behind me, isn't he?
Intriguing. I see that one of the featured reviews on IMDb suggests this is a highly entertaining and eccentric episode with a terrific opening where our hero is almost killed by a mini cannon and arrow. The rest is just as fun. Quirky entry with an interesting idea that wouldn't be odd, as we've already alluded to in the Avengers TV series. And it's far from dull, especially when you get Angela Douglas and Roger Moore, who have a good chemistry. She's also good at actually managing to use a motorboat in the night to get across a lake with fine boots in there. Rick, did you feel the chemistry between Angela Douglas, who, of course, was married to Kenneth Moore, a friend of Roger Moore, of course? Did you think that actually did come across well here? Because we often talk about Annette Andres a number of times. She's in the Saints series, 5, I believe. Do you feel this also worked for Angela Douglas and Roger?
I did, very much so. And I think it's because Roger, just as a person, was just so likeable. Like yourself, I've interviewed a number of actors and actresses that work with Roger. None of them ever have a bad word to say about him. They all say what a gentleman he was, how you know, good he was as a director, how what a caring person he was. He was something of a practical joker. I think we know that about Roger Moore. And I think that warmth that he gives out as himself and as his character, I think rubs off on his co-stars. So naturally, you sometimes get people who maybe are difficult to work with. And you can see in the performance that others are finding it difficult to work with him. Whereas with Roger, he was so much liked by everyone he worked with that comes across as a genuine chemistry between people that are acting with him. Angela Douglas comes across so pleasant because you can tell she's having a good time performing with Roger. And I'm so pleased that Stephen and Jessica, who are fairly new to the character and fairly new to the actor, feel that comes across as well. He's so effortlessly likable to us as viewers, but also obviously to the people that work with him. And I think that enables the chemistry to be greater than maybe it would have been if it had been much as I love him. Yeah, absolutely.
Jessica, we've reached the stage where we need to look for scores. So what score out of 10 are you going to go for the death game? Will it be a decathlon? Will it be a 10? Will it be less than that? Will it be perfect range of things? What ingenuity will you bring to this piece?
I'm going to say a 7.5. I enjoyed it. I did not enjoy it as much as I liked the Loch Ness Monster episode of The Saint. I thought that was so kooky and fun. I like this one a lot. I think the scene at the end where they were running through the dark snow in winter coats was hilarious. I don't know why, the way it was filmed. I'm positive I filmed this exact scene when I was younger and had my parents' camera. It was just very funny to me, but I think it was an interesting idea. I just wish we could have had more. Maybe if it was longer, I would have enjoyed it more.
I think it's interesting because unless I'm completely off base here, I suspect that they were doubles who were running. Certainly Roger Moore didn't, again, often ITC, they didn't actually have their lead stars at risk by actually doing any running from that point of view. So I think that was a stunt double.
Absolutely. And also, I don't know if you noticed, they were trying to sort of film day for night, but kind of obviously got the lenses kind of slightly wrong. So whenever it was long shot with Roger Moore's double, it was daylight. And then whenever he went to Roger Moore in close-up, it was nighttime again. So they obviously cutting corners there with the filming tech.
Maybe they were just actually pushed for time. Okay, Jenny Bill, we've got your namesake obviously in here. What about score for the Death Game?
Well, I'm going to give it 6 out of 10. There was no womanizing in this, which is quite interesting, but I did think that the relationship between Jenny and the Saint was really, really good, and that lifted the episode a great deal.
And of course, Jenny did point out that Simon Templar could possibly thaw out the icy Gretel if he put his mind to it. So there was a slight suggestion there. But of course, as Gretel would have said, that is confidential. Stephen, what's your score?
I would go for a 5 on this one because I just wish they had done far more with the Death Game itself. I feel like that would have been a far stronger story if they just concentrated on the Death Game. That's what really got me interested in this one.
Well, maybe they left that for Bruce Lee to do with Game of Death in the 1970s, but that's another whole issue. Rick, what's your score?
I think I'm going to match Jessica's 7.5. I'm knocking off a little bit for the poor day for night. It's not one of the strongest Saint episodes, but I do think it's a good one. I always mark these things as to how much I enjoyed it. And even though I've seen it before, no point did I want to switch off. At no point was I clock watching or how long to go. I enjoyed it. It ended, as Robin said, with a bit of a strange ending, but I'm going to give it a very good 7.5.
I did actually point out to Robin and indirectly Stephen as well that they would probably find this slightly more enjoyable than Avatar 2, The Way of Water, which is obviously substantially long. And that might also colour the particular mark that you're looking for in terms of the 3-hour epic of James Cameron and the world of Pandora, another kind of Death Game, really. But Robin, what's your score for this one?
Well, for the record, my score for Avatar, The Way of Water was 4. This one, due to the plot holes that I just couldn't get over, this has had some points deducted, and it's a middling 5.
Well, I'm going to go for 8 because I feel that the input of Angela Douglas portraying Jenny, had a wonderful sort of oomph to the whole factor. So well worth accessing from that point of view. Rick, would you like to just plug out just some of the sort of texts that are actually available in terms of ITC that you've been responsible for, including The Essential Guide to the Prisoner? So a few moments to, hopefully without any Dalek effects, give you a chance to promote Quite Media in full.
Oh, well, that's very kind of you. It's a shame I haven't done some Doctor Who books, isn't it? Because the Dalek voice would have been a bit more appropriate there. But very kind of you to let me do plugs. Yeah, I think that the relevant ones here are Playboy, Spies and Private Eyes, which I co-edited, which is a book about all the ITC shows. Each chapter written by a different fan of a different show. So there's a couple of chapters about The Saint. And the ITC quiz book, which I know you've done from cover to cover and got them all right, Alex. There's a few chapters there on The Saint and Roger Moore. You can test your knowledge of those series and of the actor as well. And yet The Prisoner, The Essential Guide, my little pocket guide to The Prisoner TV series. All available from Amazon, but also from quitemedia.co.uk if people want to go direct, or from any good bookshops.
Excellent. And moving on, of course, next week, we go into the world of François Truffaut and Ray Bradbury as we welcome Oscar Werner as Fireman Montag in a future in which, of course, firemen don't put out fires, they start them. Yes, the book people will be to the fore. So will Julie Christie as we explore the wonderment of Fahrenheit 451 in the next edition of Resonance Rewind. For now, to Rick Davey, to Jenny Bill, to Stephen Pearce, to Robin Pearce and to Jessica Burtis, keep on keeping on. And don't forget, if you find any invitations to take part in a Death Game, I suggest you actually just scrumple up the paper and then set fire to it. So that's probably the best way to actually deal with that. And don't bother informing the police at all. It's just a way forward. So inevitably, keep on resonating.
Is it true that a long time ago, firemen used to put out fires and not burn books?
Oh, really, your uncle is right. You are lighted ahead. Put fires out. Who told you that?
Oh, I don't know, someone. But is it true? Did they?
Oh, what a strange idea.
Tell me, that number you all wear? What's it mean?
Oh, Fahrenheit 451.
Why 451 rather than 813 or 121?
Fahrenheit 451 is the temperature at which book paper catches fire and starts to burn.
Thank you.
Thank you.